Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined, as always, by Zachary Turcotte.
Opening week.
It is. Did you enjoy your off-season, Zachary?
Yeah, the Insider week. It always goes by so fast. Each year, I just try to treasure it as much as I can because
they're back at it.
Oh my Silverado's God. Always right around the corner, a blink of an eye.
Yeah,
literally. I mean, like, it's crazy too. Like, you juxtapose it with the football season, which feels like it's gone for an eternity.
Right.
You know, you miss it so much, it feels like it's never going to be back. And then it's finally back, and you're so excited. And then with golf, you know, the PGA Tour takes off for all of 1 week, and we get a amazing field like this because so many guys want to come out and play for it. And then we're off next week, and then we got the President's Cup after that. So it's it's a very strangely placed event. The DraftKings was about as excited for these contests as the players were to show up for it. So
yeah,
I looked this today, and it was disappointing. You know, if there was ever a week where, you know, they could just take off entirely almost, this would probably be the one because the contests they offered are so small. I don't even know that they're going to generate much interest.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, at least the diehards are joining us this week on the podcast. And fall season's usually pretty profitable for us with these fields. So
yeah. It's
not a bad time to be playing, even if the contests are small. I should say you be sure to check us out at fantasygolfinsider.com and footballinsideredge.com. Both sites offer outstanding research tools and in-depth articles to help guide you to be a winning fantasy and better in golf and football. This week, like you had mentioned, we're back at Silverado. Different name, though. They're going with the Pro Corps? Is that what the hell is that, Zachary?
Oh, I didn't look up who they were. No. Yeah, I mean, it was the only thing I think about with this course is Silverado. Like,
yeah.
Silverado sounds cool. They should just call it the Silverado Championship. That actually would have a pretty awesome ring. It was the Fortinet for a couple years.
Yep.
And
what was it before then? Do you remember?
I forget. There's so many that they changed the name for these things. Oh, that's another thing. That's
Safeway, wasn't it? Safeway.
Yeah, that sounds that sounds right.
That was one.
That's the other thing too. They changed the name on some of these and so many of these smaller events.
Yeah,
you just kind of lose the feel unless you really just think about the course. So, Pro Corps.
This fall we do have some familiar courses though. We got Japan, Accordia, right?
Okay.
TPC Summerlin, Country Club of Jackson, Sea Island. So we have familiar courses. Those are pretty cool courses.
Yeah, we're very familiar with most of them during this part of the schedule. And it is interesting this time of year with the way they changed up the point system because you will actually have guys who are really playing for something down the stretch. So they got to be by Sea Island. Sea Island is now the event where guys make or break and keep their card or lose it. So definitely some more on the line in terms of intensity for a lot of these borderline players. So I would maybe keep that in mind a little bit as you're looking at guys looking for any sort of narrative week to week. That would be one. Just try to find guys who are right around that cutoff point at 125 and just try to pick up on who needs a little extra motivation. And there are a handful of guys that are on here too. And there's even one or two that I kind of looked at that we'd probably get your thoughts on later that for whatever reason, this area, this time of year or this area of the tour tend to pick up their game, quite a bit. So there are a few little things that you can consider, as far as motivation when it comes to building your rosters.
Let's talk briefly about Silverado Resort, 7,123 yards, plays as a par 72, greens are POA, and they aren't all that speedy. The average size of the greens is 5,400 square feet, which puts it about average on tour. They are pretty narrow or on the narrower side. Of course, they're lined with trees, but they never have the rough out of control at this event. We see some pretty low scores coming in. Last year, Sahith won at minus 21. So it's kind of a typical fall event. And you do see certain players play well here. I always try and target the West Coast guys. You know, we see those guys who play better on POA, who play well at Riviera and Torrey and Pebble, and then here at Silverado. So I generally try and target those guys. What other comp courses besides those West Coast courses? Do you have any others in your course comp tool this week, Zachary?
I threw in a couple of the easier ones in the summer. So I got Deer Run on there. I threw Vegas TPC Summerlin on. I think you mentioned Riviera already. Detroit, Pebble Beach, TPC Twin Cities. This one hasn't been around for a while. The other one, Chapultepec, they used to play that one in Mexico, but it's that one's falling so far off the schedule now that may not even be that useful. And I can't even imagine that anybody in this field that's probably even played there at this stage. So that one might not even be that useful anymore.
All right, let's dive into the field. Defending champ Sahith is at 10,600, followed by Wyndham Clark. Max Homa, who is a juggernaut at Silverado, but coming in really, really bad form, has been bad for a couple few months now, or all through the summer pretty much. Corey Connors at 9,800. Clanton at 95. West Coast guy Maverick McNeely at 94. Who are you gravitating toward, and what kind of lineup composition are you going toward this week? Are you sticking with the Stars and Scrubs build this week like we have just about all of 2024, or in this type of field, a little bit more balanced?
Yeah, I mean, we don't get a ton of options here in the 10K and off range. So, and the prices are weird. Like, Sahith and Wyndham Clark should be way more expensive, don't you think? Like 10.6 and 10.4. Yeah. Like, Sahith, put him at 12 and put Wyndham at like 11.5. Like, why? 10.6, it just makes them too easy to roster, because Max, I guess I'm kind of out on just because he's been hitting the ball so poorly. So, yeah, so Sahith and Clark are both going to be core guys for me this week, because I'm sure they will be for many, many other folks.
Half the field.
Yeah, yeah, Wyndham hasn't been great here over the years, but it really was kind of after his last appearance here when he got really hot that season. So I'm not quite as worried about those numbers prior to that. And then Sahith obviously won here a year ago, looked great at the Tour Championship, had a third place finish there, made a real nice run. So those two will be the guys that I feature. I will have in the 9K range, there's some decent players there. I've got some Corey Connors, ball striker extraordinaire. The short game is kind of starting to fall back a little bit, but still one of the better players in the field. Luke Clanton looks like he is going to be the real deal.
Yeah.
Handful of top 10 finishes already. I'm perfectly fine. There's going to be people who are going to say, oh, 9,500 for this kid. Like, look at the rest of the field. Like, if you were any lower, everybody would own him in terms of the price. So I don't have any issue there. Maverick McNeely, for whatever reason, this is one that should be great for him. He had a second place finish 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Outside of that, not particularly impressive, but you know, overall playing pretty well of late coming in. So with his, you know, with his positive form, he had a nice finish there in the playoffs at a 12th place finish, FedEx St. Jude. So I'll have some of some Maverick McNeely. Anybody else that you're looking at in the nines?
Yeah, I like Corey Connors quite a bit. I'm putting an emphasis on strokes gained approach this week, and there's none better in the approach game than Corey Connors. I do like Clanton quite a bit. Love the form. He's just, and we see in these fall events, this is a great time for these young guys to shine and get their first PGA Tour victory. We've seen it quite a bit, and I think it's an opportunity for him. He's been close. And I do like Maverick as well. Not great success here, but West Coast guy. and she's very familiar with Poa greens. He's a great putter, and especially on Poa, so I will own him too. I do like quite a bit stacking a few of these 9K guys, and then also a couple, and then doing a more balanced roster, just because the 6K range is
terrible,
horrific this week. It really is probably the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's hard coming up with any reasons why to roster any of those guys.
Yeah,
so I think a balanced lineup is legit this week, especially since you're going to have big time ownership because of the price on Thigala and Clark. You're going to have a ton of people gravitating toward those guys.
Oh yeah, and it's, you know, it's for sure if either of those guys starts off slow, they could definitely be out of here. I think both of those guys are playing in the President's Cup, I think, next week.
Yes, yes.
So
that, I mean, that's a factor, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, Wyndham Clark, he's on the Ryder Cup team last year, so he's been a part of this before. But this is kind of the first time for Sahith to be playing in one of these bigger international events. He's got to be kind of excited about that. Even if it's just the President's Cup, I'm sure being a part of that team is a pretty big deal. So if either of these guys start slow, wouldn't shock me at all.
Holma's on the team too, you know.
Oh, geez, that's right. Yeah, he was also a pick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, that was that is a wild
right,
captain's
right.
pick.
Isn't that crazy?
That's just, yeah, I mean, I don't know, take it out of the captain's hands so it doesn't feel so idiotic. But
yeah, that's pretty bad.
Like, he qualifies fine, but like picking him to be on the team is, man, he's played awful. I don't know why you'd even want to put him out there because he's going to have to play, which is strange. So yeah, and then there's a few of these guys, a few of the Canadian guys that are going there too. I guess I should have put that in front of me, but I think Corey Connors is probably a part of the.
Yep.
International team, and who else? They think they picked Mackenzie Hughes was a captain's pick, if my memory serves me right. So there's a couple of guys there that'll be making the trip. But yeah, I could definitely see if any of those guys start slow, I could kind of see them checking out a little bit to get up to. I think it's in Montreal, although it's not next week either. So next week is off. So
right, and that's a week after.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, who knows if that's even something that gets in their heads. But this event here, I think, I feel like Sahith normally, if he hadn't won it last time, he would probably skip. Max, if he hadn't won a couple times, he would probably skip. This feels like one they committed to like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And their agent called them and said, hey, make sure you get to California for this one. And then just kind of shrugged and said, all right, we'll go. So. See, I think that's a decent way to play in the 9K. A couple guys that are way up here in price in the nines that you don't really see these guys up in the 9K range much, but I do kind of like the way that both of them are playing. But
Brendan Todd
and JJ Spahn's a California guy, he's Southern California, and he's got San Diego ties there. But Brendan Todd has actually, both of them are in really good form. You look at the last few months. Spahn wasn't great for much of last season, slumped quite a bit. But the last couple of months, six straight cuts in 12 weeks with three top 10 finishes. Brendan Todd, three top 25s in his last five starts and three straight top 25s here. And both have had decent success here in recent years. You mentioned iron play. JJ Spahn actually ranks first among this field in strokes gained approach over the last 16 rounds. So that's kind of impressive. We didn't see much of that all season, and all of a sudden it really came alive there. I normally would really not want to pay $9,000 for either of those guys, but I think they're both pretty appealing plays, especially like a guy like Todd too. He's certainly one who can sink a lot of birdies on these easier greens. So I think both of those guys are also in play.
Is Eric Cole a absolute lock for cash games?
It feels like it.
That's a cheap price.
It is a cheap price.
Bizarre.
Like you look at like him and you look at like Harris English right there. You're like, why is Harris English more expensive than Eric
Cole? Yeah, I know.
Because the form for Cole has suddenly been pretty sharp.
Right.
You know, the short game has kind of turned around. The approach play has been very good. You know, he's not great because he doesn't have a lot of distance off the tee, but that's fine. I mean, this is a very short par 72 course here. So there, length is definitely not going to be an issue. He finished fourth here a year ago and he was on an incredible run, and really all the way up until he went out to Colorado at that, you know, 8,000 yard course. He was on a pretty nice run. So I 8,700, I think that is a great price for him. So yeah, Cole will definitely make my player pool.
I like Patrick Rogers too. He's actually been really consistent, which is weird for Patrick Rogers, but he's been making steady. Cuts. He's had some great finishes here through the years.
California ties.
Yep, yeah. California ties. So you can build a really nice balanced lineup with Cole and Rogers near the top of it too. So
yeah, a lot of these guys, I think this is there's definitely room to build around. Bo Hosler's been really solid here. He was really kind of cold there near the back half. Beginning of the season, I felt like, he's a new man. He's found a completely different level of his game. And then he kind of went back to being Bo Hosler again. But this has been an event that he plays pretty much every year, and he's been pretty consistent. Pretty solid player. Mac Meisner at 8,000. He ranks really well for me in terms of my model and everything that I put together there. 8,000 was a little too low of a price for him. His tee to green numbers are fantastic. He's putting it pretty well, really good across the board in all statistical areas. The form has been really solid. Four of his last five were top 20 finishes there. So I think he's a great play. And then our boy Cooch at 7,900.
Yeah.
There's another one. He's going to be a lock for my core this week at that price. It's just a little too cheap for somebody who's starting to turn it around late in the season. He's all of a sudden he found his irons again, which is crazy because there wasn't much the tee to green game. It was kind of carrying himself with just a short game. But of late, he's managed to put together a handful of top 25 finishes. He's been good here the last 3 years, two straight top 15s. And there's, like I've probably said it 10 times on the show and in my columns, there's only a handful of courses where you really want to target him. You're just not going to target him on longer, tougher courses anymore. But some of these little short courses where the plotters can handle themselves, it's not a bad spot. 7,900 was a little lower price wise than I thought he was going to come in. So I think he's another guy that I will probably lock in for cash games.
Like some Mac Meisner too.
Yeah, that's who I was just talking about prior to that. Yeah, 8,000 there. Yeah, he's at a great run where he's, you know, four of his last five have been top 20 finishes, and his tee to green numbers are really good across the board. His short game's been good. Like, this is the kind of spot where a player like him, I think, could break through and get a win.
Now we're getting down to the dredge. 7K range, there's a few guys. I like Rico at 7,700. Yeah. I think that's a legit play. He's actually been, you know, he's had some high upside finishes. They weren't at tremendous field events, but neither is this one.
Right.
A runner-up and a T8 at some crummy events, but T22 at Wyndham. So I think he's good, and he fits nicely into
yes.
a balanced lineup. And then dropping down, I do own some Andrew Putnam, which I'm not thrilled about, but
yeah,
I don't know. And some Smalley at 7,400.
I've got a little bit of Patrick Fishburne. He was beginning to strike the ball very, very well. He did miss the cut at the Wyndham. Prior to that, he had four top 25s in his previous five starts. So that was impressive. Neil Shipley at 7,600. Clanton has obviously had a little bit more success, but Shipley was very good last year. We saw him play really well at the majors. Had a couple of top 20s there. Beyond that, so I'm encouraged by that. I think 7,600 is a pretty good price. Those are the kind of guys I'm trying to find in this field, like the younger guys who are, I think, on the cusp over the next couple of years of developing, but are still pretty cheap here this week. So Shipley there in the lower 7K range, Justin Lower is somebody that I've got some shares of. His short game has suddenly been very sharp. He's been making cuts. He had a fourth place finish here a couple years ago. So that is encouraging enough for me. The lower 7K range is, it's pretty weak. There really isn't a lot that I love down here. From the lower 7K and beyond, I don't really own much of anything. The one guy that I thought I would bring up, because I was talking about it at the beginning of the show, we talked about guys who play pretty well on the West Coast or guys who play pretty well in the fall. I'm going to throw out a name. We haven't probably talked about him for a while because he's been kind of poor for a while, but this is the part of the year where he's pretty good. Taylor Montgomery at 7,300.
Yep.
You look at how well he's played in the fall over the last couple of years or on just the West Coast portion of the schedule, and it's been kind of amazing. I mean, if he just could play out on the West Coast in that part of the country, he would be incredible. You look at his numbers in terms of what he does. So you pull up the turf splits on POA greens. His numbers are phenomenal. I mean, it's not a lot of rounds, obviously, but in 32 rounds here on pole greens, he's gaining 1.252 strokes per round. So he's already a great putter, and he's even better on POA than on other surfaces there. He did have a third place finish here 2 years ago. I'm not sure. Was he hurt at all at some point? Obviously, we don't follow
this
him.
This year, no.
We don't follow him too closely, but he hasn't played in a long time. He hasn't played since the Genesis Scottish Open back in the middle of July. Now, of course, you know, the next week would have been the Open Championship, but I guess I don't know why he would have skipped out on the 3M, why he would have skipped out on Wyndham. It seemed a little strange that he would skip the last two, because now it's been, you know, 2 months since he's played in an event. But if you just look back at the beginning of the year, he had a number of pretty solid finishes. And then if you look at the previous season, it looked like he was going to be a stud on tour. You know, started out with just a ton of top 15 finishes. And then all of a sudden it gets out to the East Coast and, you know, things kind of fall apart and never really right themselves until he gets back into the fall season again. So that's a guy, I'm not going to own a lot of him, but that's the type of player you're going to have to find. A guy who's not really showing a lot of form. He's not really going to show up probably on the strokes gain stats, but you're going to have to find a guy like that who's going to seem to come out of nowhere a little bit if you're going to take down some GPPs this time of year, because there's not going to be a lot process-wise that you're going to be able to just highlight once we get down from, you know, into this low 7K range and then definitely into the 6K range.
Give me two names from the 6K range who you could live with, even if it's, you know, 5% exposure to.
There weren't many that popped up for me. So when I was looking at it this week, I did a couple things because I wanted to just find like, okay, draft, like who's highlighted by their odds. And so the first guy that came up for me was Henrik Norlander at 6,800.
Yep.
Very streaky player. He's never made a cut here in four starts, so I don't love that.
Right.
But did have four top 25 finishes late in the season, and he's actually played the last couple of weeks. So he must have played these last 2 weeks on the DP World Tour. He finished eighth last week. So he comes in already. A lot of these guys down here have been off for four straight weeks. So a lot of them have had, you know, like a full month where they haven't really done anything. So the fact that he's not coming in cold, I think, gives him at least a little bit of a edge.
Yep.
This hasn't been a great spot for him, but the numbers on him are not that bad either as far as what he's got. You know, over the last 16 rounds, he actually ranks second among this group in strokes gained tee to green and 11th in strokes gained total. So he stood out. The other guy that I highlighted off of that was, it was kind of in that range, was Trace Crow at 6,900. His tee to green numbers and overall numbers have been decent of late. Comes in with back-to-back top 25 finishes. Not much else besides that would draw me in there. So those are the first two that I've looked at. There were, which other guys were kind of highlighted for me? Oh, there weren't many.
Maybe a little, yeah. I mean, I got a little Robbie Shelton.
Okay. Yeah, he has a couple. He's had a couple decent finishes here in a row.
Two Vince top 20 Wheely, times. Possibly. It's dog shit down here. There's not much. And I won't have much ownership down here at all.
No, I don't think you would. I mean, unless you had a real strong feeling for some reason. But none of them are in form. You know, there's a handful of older veterans that are down here. You get a guy like Russell Knox at 6,400. I think I had a little bit of Ben Taylor, but not much at 64. But yeah, you just can't make much of an argument for most of these guys that are in this range.
Week one is in the books for NFL.
Yes, it is. Vikes 1-0, baby.
Yeah, right.
It was an interesting week. You definitely learned a lot on week one, you know, the big thing coming out of it. I had wins on FanDuel and on DraftKings pretty easily, actually, which was great. It was no sweat at all. First week, I'm always sweating it because, you know, I know all the guys, but you just never know exactly how they're going to fit at the beginning of the season. I mean, you know how the best players on each team, Tyreek Hill, that's not going to change too much unless he finds himself in a jumpsuit in a jail cell. But yeah, for the most part, you know how guys are going to fit into their teams. But new coaches, new schemes, you know, free agents move around, the draft. It takes a couple weeks to really start to feel out, you know, what's going on. So I tend to play pretty conservatively in the opening weeks. And that worked out really well for me yesterday. Let's see, what things did I notice? Interesting things you and I had kind of talked about before we came on air. As far as the rookie class, this very heavily touted rookie class, they were kind of dog shit yesterday.
Tough start.
As far as the skill players are concerned, all three, you know, you had six quarterbacks get picked in the first round. Three of them are on the bench. Obviously, J.J. McCarthy injured, but Caleb Williams, wow, he was
not
awful.
Good there. Yeah.
Under 100 yards. I mean, he, for all the hype that went into him, and I mean, watching him in the preseason, I thought, oh, this is interesting. It looks like the Bears really have something here. And the Bears had a very bear-like victory where they were getting crushed, and they get a punt block touchdown, and then Will Levis forgets how to play football and just flips the ball up in the air and gets picked off and run back for a touchdown. So that was, he got bailed out pretty good there. It wasn't, Jaden Daniels didn't really show me much. He had everything. He had a ton of fantasy points. And I think that'll be a regular story with him this season. He picked up a ton of garbage time points. And
oh, yeah.
You know, they,
and their defense is so bad. They're going to be way down in a lot of games.
The Washington secondary is awful. I mean, yep. They made Baker Mayfield look like Peyton Manning out there throwing for four touchdowns. And I like to see that Baker is rallied. It's hilarious to me that Baker is rallying now that he's out of Cleveland and Deshaun Watson is just completely floundering. So yeah, Daniels didn't do much, but I think he's gonna be a guy who picks up just piles of yardage running the ball. He's gonna rush for 70 to 80 yards a game. He's gonna run for a touchdown or two. Did he even hit Terry McLaurin with a pass? What did McLaurin have? One or two catches the whole game?
He missed Terry McLaurin. It was real close.
Yeah, he missed him on one, but wasn't working him in at all. Which if you're not working him in, I don't really know what else you've got to work with for the rest of the team. So he wasn't great. Bo Nix looked a little overwhelmed. He didn't look ready to me. I mean, they're going to rush him out there and play him. He had a couple moments, but, you know, going up against Seattle, that's not a world beater type of a defense. So he wasn't great. And then all of the star wide receivers. Yeah, I played Malik Nabers on my DK team, and he was not terrible. He had like 5 for 60 or something like that. So it wasn't a complete bust for him, but yeah, I mean, Marvin Harrison caught one ball for 4 yards.
Yeah.
That was, wow. And it's not like they have, a ton of other guys that they can target. So that was pretty wild. Adunze had nothing. I think he had one catch on the day for like 10 yards or something like that. So he didn't do much of anything. I think Ladd McConkey got kind of a lucky touchdown late for for the Chargers. So he did find the end zone there, but really just not much to report on. There wasn't anybody who had a real eye opener, game breaking type of performance just in their first game. And, you know, that's fine. That's kind of normal too. It may take a little while for some of these guys to emerge, but I mean, for all of the hype for that last draft class, that nobody came out yesterday and just looked like they're going to be, you know, a superstar the way that we've seen some other guys do over the years. So I don't know, that was the first impression I had, was that the draft guys still look like rookies. They still look like they have a long way to go.
Well, it wasn't just rookies who look like, if you drafted them in your fantasy leagues, you're in deep trouble. Guys like, well, you mentioned Harrison, but Drake London was a nothing burger.
Oh, Kirk Cousins. Wow, that was hilarious.
Kirk Cousins was a nothing. Oh, my God.
I mean, after one game, are the Falcons just have to be regretting the hell out of that decision. I mean, just the Vikings look so good in terms of Levy, and we knew the right decision was letting him walk after last year. I mean, you knew he was going to probably want a crazy amount of money, because Kirk at his core is just a mercenary. I mean, he's always going to give you that kind of cryptic comment about the money and what it's worth and what I'm worth and the contract. There's the way that he talked near the end of last year. You knew if somebody offered him a penny more than the Vikings, he was right. Going to be out of there.
Oh, yeah.
And he did. And that's great. And now he gets to deal with the fact that he's in a completely different system with an offensive mind that I don't think is very good. It's crazy. He has, you'd think, a decent amount of weapons around him.
You know, yeah, for sure.
Bijan and then Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Like, gosh, you'd think that they'd be able to put it together. And they looked awful. And the thing with Kirk is he already has issues with his pocket presence when the pocket starts to break down a little bit. And so a team like the Steelers are always going to be a terrible matchup, because they've got so many guys that can bring pressure. TJ Watt was just wrecking him at the end of the game yesterday. He's never going to be able to step through it, especially now that, you know, he's recovered from the Achilles injury, but I'm sure that that's going to slow him down even more than before. So he just looked slow. He looked lethargic. He didn't have a lot of zip on his passes. He had a couple of interceptions. He took a lot of hits. Really unimpressive. And now they're strapped with him for at least a couple years. But, boy, it really seems like the groundwork is set for them to be done with him in like 2 years and move on and then put Penix in there, which seems crazy. You have to wonder about everybody involved with that, especially like the Falcons. Like, well, I don't even know what they were thinking, if they're going to pay him that much. And then we hated that at the draft when they picked up Penix there.
Yeah. So
very, very strange. But it felt very gratifying for the Viking, as Vikings fans, to watch that. Darnold had a very efficient day. He looked good, pretty poised in the pocket. Arm looked sharp. Made a lot of good throws. It hurt him a little bit that Kick Addison turned his ankle there. In the second half, his other ankle, so he was out, so that slowed him up. But the Vikes looked sharp. That defense played pretty well. Aaron Jones was running hard. It was a good team win for them. I think that's the team you probably can bet against now, because their schedule gets real tough from here.
Yeah.
I'll be in Vegas this week, so I'm very intrigued by what that spread is going to be against the 49ers, who look like absolute world beaters tonight in crushing Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. How do you feel about the Jets after tonight? I was pretty high on the Jets coming into this season.
Were you?
I just felt like Rodgers, if he's healthy, their defense showed a lot last year. I mean, they were still like a 7-win team last year, even with some of the worst quarterback play we've ever seen in our lives. They were a competitive team, and they beat some good teams last season. So all they really needed was just anybody capable. They've got decent weapons on offense. I mean, you know, you got Breece Hall, you've got Mike Williams, you've got Garrett Wilson out there. And if Rodgers is at the top of his game, you'd think he'd be pretty good. The line was, you know, not especially impressive. They got manhandled in the trenches on the other side of the ball. I mean, the 49ers, I thought with McCaffrey out, this was going to be a lower scoring, close type of game. Niners grinding things out, and the Niners were, oh, we'll just put Mason in here and he'll rush for 147 yards. So that was pretty wild. The vaunted Jets secondary got picked apart. I mean, Brock Purdy continues to be just incredibly impressive running that offense there. Unbelievable to watch there. So I don't know if the Niners are just, you know, a team that only loses once or twice all year on their way to getting into another Super Bowl, or if the Jets were just way off their game. But I had higher hopes for the Jets. I thought potentially they'd be able to sneak up and maybe even win that division. With the Bills certainly looked down. I mean, they weren't that impressive against the Cardinals. The Dolphins were not great against the Jags. Obviously, the Patriots won against the Bengals, but I think that had more to do with the Bengals being terrible than the Patriots really being any good. So I thought this was a chance maybe for the Jets to sneak up and maybe win the division, and they maybe still could, but it didn't look like they had near the caliber of team tonight that I thought they did coming into the year.
No, but they get to rebound next week against Tennessee, so.
Yeah, that's true. They should be able to eat up Will Levis.
Yeah.
But, you know, they got to get that offense moving a little bit. What were some of your takeaways watching games this week?
Yeah, I'm pumping the brakes on the Vikings. I'm not going to get too overly excited because it was the Giants. The bad teams stand out right away. The Raiders are a bad team, and now the Falcons look like they're out of hope. The Panthers don't look like a professional team at all. I'm not sure what they were doing. They like had revolving receivers throughout the game. They went out and got Deontay. I thought he was going to be kind of their alpha. I thought he was going to get a ton of targets. Not like I drafted him in hardly any best ball, because I don't have any Panthers in my best ball, but I still thought he would be kind of peppered with targets because he's always been that target monster in Pittsburgh, but he was not on the field all that much. He was rotating, and good luck, Bryce Young. You get zero separation with Adam Thielen. Yeah, he's really helping Bryce Young. So
yeah, he'll catch like 100 passes for like 900 yards this year.
Yeah.
He'll catch a lot of them. He's not going to gain a ton of yards. Like Chuba Hubbard at running back, and I thought maybe he'd be okay. I kind of thought he was really cheap on FanDuel, so he looked like an okay option. He had some decent games down the stretch. He was okay in cash games late last year. He was not great. Yeah, they screwed up so badly with trading the whole world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
2 years ago to Chicago to get to Bryce Young. And now he just doesn't look like the guy. I mean, man, what a bad, bad decision that was. And the crazy part of going all in for Bryce Young was they knew there was a pretty good quarterback class coming the next season.
Exactly.
So it's like, okay, well, do we have to trade everything now? Because it's likely we're probably not going to be great next season either.
Right.
So there's a good chance we'll still be in the top 10. There's still a good chance we'll be able to go out and get a guy next year if we're just a little bit patient.
Yeah.
No, instead they trade away the farm. They get a guy. It looks like he's going to be a miss at quarterback. And their franchise is just sunk because it's going to be – I mean, it might be a decade before that team is good. I can't think of any guy on their roster right now will be around the next time that team makes the playoffs. So they're horrible. There are a few other teams that were not great. Oh, you know, there's a couple of teams we could talk about some good teams too. There's a lot of bad teams. Cowboys looked sharp.
Obviously, yeah, they did.
Regular season world beaters. Our old friend Mike Zimmer running the defense down there.
That's where he belongs, man. I've been saying that forever. That's where he belongs.
He's a coordinator.
Yes.
Defensive coordinator. He should be nowhere near an offensive coordinator or an offensive game plan. But he's in his element.
Yep.
And he's doing it with a lot of his guys from back when he was in Minnesota. That's kind of the funny part. He's got Linval down there. He's got Kendricks down there playing. Dalvin Cook is, you know, on the offensive side playing. That's kind of funny. But yeah, they made the Browns look silly yesterday. What did you think of Dak's big contract for years, $240 million. He's their first $60 million a year quarterback in the NFL. The Cowboys were really in kind of a corner, though. It was one of those things where you can't really not sign him at this point. you can't walk away from that and just go hope to find somebody to fill in and, you know, be decent. Cause they're really, they're capable. They haven't done it, but I feel like there's no reason they're not capable of making a playoff run with all of the great players that they've got on defense. And now, you know, having Dak, having, you know, CeeDee Lamb out there, they've got dust at running back. It seems like, I mean, they are a true running back by committee this year. I mean, we've got Zeke out there. You've got Cook out there. You've got, who else did they play?
Rico Dowdle.
Rico Dowdle. Yeah. I think they even played a fourth guy. I mean, that is a true committee. So I don't know that they're going to get much.
Yeah. But we've seen teams do just fine with a committee at running back. It's just all about the quarterback, top receiver, decent offensive line and a solid defense. Although, did you see, is Dalton Schultz out for a while? I saw.
You mean Ferguson for the
Cowboys? I mean Ferguson, yeah, not Dalton Schultz.
I didn't see what I saw him go out of the game. let me just pull that up because they took him out. He landed kind of funny on his knee, and so they took him out in like the third quarter. It says Ferguson hasn't been ruled out to play week two versus the Saints, despite being diagnosed with an MCL sprain and bone bruise in his knee Monday.
That would be a big loss for them.
One or two weeks is fine, but yeah, he was a breakout player last year. Like we weren't really sure what was going to happen. Oh, they lose Dalton Schultz. Oh no. And then this Jake Ferguson comes in 71 catches for 760 yards, 5 touchdowns. He was an animal in the playoff game, even though they got beat by the Packers. So yeah, he's definitely a very key piece. But it looks like he's going to be okay. But that was pretty impressive. Saquon Barkley really impressed me. Eagles, holy cow! Yeah, I mean that's. I thought that was a weird signing for the Eagles. It seemed very un-Eagle-like to go do that because they've been a team that's just rotated back.
Every year.
All the way back to when they won the Super Bowl. They've always had like just 2-3 guys and they ride the hot hand for a little while. And I mean, they had Swift last year who played pretty well. So I was shocked that they went and spent the money, but he tore it up. That was pretty impressive. So that the Cowboys Eagles look like the two standout teams there that will be, you know, kind of battling it out. What else? Is there anything else? I got nothing else.
No, that's about it. Look forward to week two.
Yeah. It should be exciting. It's fun to have it back. And now that we've seen them for a week, you start to get a much better feel here each week moving forward. So it should just get better and better for us on the DFS side.
If you have any questions for us, definitely hit us up. You could do it on Twitter or email us or jump in Slack chat anytime you like. But with that, we leave you this week with the Silverado Championship. You like that, Zachary?
Yeah, I do love it.
And week two of the NFL, and we'll be talking to you later. Have a good one.
Good luck.